I want to begin the sermon by repeating the reading that Katie just did because I love it so much. Martin Bergman, a clinical professor of psychology, said, "When we fall in love, we are seeking to rediscover all or some of the people to whom we were attached as children." Which explains why my wife is exactly the same age as my older sister. On the other hand, we ask our beloved to correct all the wrongs that these early parents or siblings inflicted on us, which my wife has had to struggle with for our entire marriage. In adulthood, we all want partners to have all the good qualities of our parents and our siblings, but none of their faults. Bringing these expectations to our adult relationships, we often disagree on basic issues. Who should do what tasks around the house? How should we spend money? How should we raise the kids? One solution to these conflicts is to train your partner to use the same methods that are effective in training animals. I should say training other animals. When I was 19, I took a university class in psychology that focused on what B.S. Skinner called operant conditioning. As part of the class, I was assigned a white rat, given the name T8. To pass the class, I was expected to teach T8 to pick up a marble in its mouth and place it in a hole in a can. T8 was kept in a cage where it was fed, but never given quite enough water. If the rat had all the water it wanted, it would become satiated. It would not be thirsty. So the rat was kept thirsty all the time, so I could train T8 anytime I had a spare moment from my other classes at the university to drop by the lab. Each day I would go to the psychology building, I would take T8 out of the cage and put the rat in a plastic box with a marble and a soup can turned upside down. The soup can had a hole in the top large enough for the marble. The box had a water spout, and I had a little clicker that controlled that water spout. Each time I clicked, a little water would come out of the spout. This design was invented by B.F. Skinner in 1930, and it's called the Skinner box. I used approximations, rewarding small steps towards learning a new behavior. At first, things moved very slowly. The rat randomly moved around the plastic box. I waited for it to get close to the marble. Sometimes 15 or 20 minutes would pass before the rat would get anywhere close to the marble. When it did, I would immediately push the clicker and the rat would get a little water. Timing was critical. I had to click immediately when the behavior I wanted occurred. Otherwise, the rat would not associate the reward with the behavior I wanted. Days passed. I sat in the booth daydreaming. This was 1970. Around the nation, students were being killed at Kent State. Thousands of people were marching in the streets. All across the country, even outside the psychology lab at Arizona State University. Between demonstrations, between occupying the ROTC building, I would head over to the psychology lab because you can't just take a 2 or 3 week break on this. You have to be consistently doing it day after day after day, or the rat will forget and you have to start all over again. So I would be out there saying, "Stop the war," and then I would go inside and click the clicker. I thought to myself, This rat will never learn. I will be a failure. I will drop out of college. I will be a dishwasher all my life if I'm not drafted. I wonder if the girl in the next booth had a boyfriend. I wondered why people had voted for Richard Nixon. I thought about what I might have for lunch. T.A. touched the marble. Click. Water. The rat drank. The rat ran around the plastic box, excited, trying to figure out what it did to cause the water to appear. Wow, what happened? Another 15, 20, 30 minutes would pass. T.A. randomly touched the marble. Click, more water. After several days, T.A. figured out that when it touched the marble, it got water. But I wanted more. So now I stopped giving T.A. water when it touched the marble. I waited and waited until, incredibly frustrated and thirsty, the white rat finally, in exasperation, bit the marble. Click, water. T.A. drank. Now this time the learning was faster. Perhaps 10 minutes later, T.A. put the marble in its mouth again. Again, I rewarded the rat with water. Within a half an hour, T.A. figured out that if it put the marble in its mouth, it got rewarded. It got the water. Then I started what B.F. Skinner called variable reinforcement. T.A. didn't get the water every time it put the marble in its mouth. Only every fourth or fifth time, or every second time, or every seventh time. See, it varied, and T.A. would never know. Pretty soon, T.A. was walking around the cage with a marble in its mouth almost all the time. But now I wanted to get T.A. to climb up onto the can. So I started only giving T.A. water when it got close to the can. This took days. Finally, in its random movement, the rat would get up onto the can with the marble in its mouth. And I clicked, water. T.A. dropped the marble out of its mouth, and it fell in the hole. He ran to get the water. Over the next 2 days, I reinforced the behavior every single time it occurred. Then I switched to variable reinforcement. T.A. knew exactly what to do. I called in the teaching assistant who observed the behavior and gave me credit. I got an A in the class. My own form of positive reinforcement. And I thought, perhaps I will not spend my life washing dishes. B.F. Skinner and other behavioralists discovered through experimentation that animals learn much faster by being given positive reinforcement instead of being punished, what Skinner called negative reinforcement. When the animal did not do what you wanted, you did not punish it. Instead, you did absolutely nothing. All activity that was not desirable was simply ignored. All activity that was desirable was given positive reinforcement. No punishment ever. Long before B.F. Skinner, animal trainers had discovered on their own that by rewarding animals with little bits of food and praising the animals, they could be taught to do tricks. But in the past, most animal trainers also used punishment to train their animals to do what they wanted. Skinner proved that positive reinforcement is much more effective than punishment. In 1974, an animal training school was founded based on positive reinforcement. Moore Park Community College near Ventura, California, became the Harvard of schools for exotic animal trainers. And then in 2006, Amy Sutherland wrote a book about the school, describing how the animals, all kinds of animals, including orchid whales, were trained using positive reinforcement for places like SeaWorld. After studying animal training, Sutherland went back to her home where she lived with her husband, Scott. And as you heard, frustrated by some of Scott's habits, she decided to try what she had learned in animal training. For example, Scott had the annoying habit of dropping his clothes on the floor. In the New York Times article, she wrote, "I began to analyze my husband the way a trainer considers an exotic animal. Enlightened trainers learn all they can about the species, from anatomy to social structure to understanding how it thinks, what it likes and dislikes, what comes easily to it and what doesn't. For example, an elephant is a herd animal, so it responds to hierarchy. It cannot jump, but it can stand on its head. It is a vegetarian. The exotic animal known as Scott is a loner, but an alpha male. So hierarchy matters, but being in a group doesn't so much. He has the bounce of a gymnast, but moves slowly, especially when getting dressed. Skiing comes naturally, but being on time does not. He's an omnivore and what a trainer would call food-driven." She goes on, "Once I started thinking this way, I couldn't stop. At the school in California, I'd be scribbling notes on how to walk an emu or have a wolf accept you as a pack member, but I'd be thinking, I can't wait to try this on Scott." Again and again, Sutherland has been asked what her husband thinks about the article. She says, "If I'm feeling flip, I'll say, I stopped nagging and started bringing him beer and chips. Who could object to that? If I'm feeling philosophical, I'll say, we're always training each other, whether we realize it or not." Well, as I discovered with my rat, training animals to do things takes an enormous amount of time, whereas simply telling your partner the behavior you have a problem with, telling them how it concretely affects you, and telling them how you feel takes a lot less time. However, if your partner does not respond to straightforward conversation, and you have a great deal of patience, behavioral modification might be effective. Amy Sutherland writes, "I followed the students to SeaWorld San Diego, where a dolphin trainer introduced me to least reinforcing syndrome. When a dolphin does something wrong, the trainer doesn't respond in any way. He stands still for a few beats, careful not to look at the dolphin, and then returns to work. The idea is that any response, positive or negative, fuels a behavior. If a behavior provokes no response, it typically dies away." So this explains to you who know me, sometimes I don't respond to your emails. Amy Sutherland says, "As I wash dishes at the kitchen sink, my husband paces behind me, irritated. Have you seen my keys? He snarls, and then he huffs out a loud sigh and stomps from the room. I focus on the wet dish in my hands. I don't turn around. I don't say a word. I'm using a technique I learned from a dolphin trainer. He was, again, tearing around the house, searching for keys, at which point I said nothing, and I kept at what I was doing. It took a lot of discipline to maintain my calm, but the results were immediate and stunning. His temper fell off, shy of its usual pitch, and then waned like a fast-moving storm. I felt as if I should throw him a mackerel." Of course, the difference between a dolphin and a partner is that you can have a conversation with most partners in which you talk back and forth, whereas dolphins do not speak English. I've always thought that talking to people is an effective way to communicate. However, apparently this did not work with Scott, and apparently Amy Sutherland has enormous patience. Sitting silently when your partner does something that offends you can result in the behavior dying away, as long as your partner is not getting positive reinforcement for this behavior from some other source. Amy Sutherland writes, "On a field trip with the students, I listened to the professional trainer describe how he had taught African crested cranes to stop landing on his head and shoulders. He did this by training the leggy birds to land on mats on the ground. This, he explained, is what is called incompatible behavior, a simple but brilliant concept. Rather than teach the cranes to stop landing on him, the trainer taught the birds to do something else, a behavior that would make the undesirable behavior impossible. The birds couldn't align on the mats and his head simultaneously. At home," she writes, "I came up with incompatible behaviors for Scott to keep him from crowding me when I cooked. To lure him away from the stove, I would pile parsley for him to chop or cheese for him to grate at the other end of the kitchen island. Or I'd set out a bowl of chips and salsa across the room. Soon I'd done it. No more Scott hovering around me while I cooked." Again, I assume that Amy Sutherland started by saying to her husband, Scott, "Honey, back off. I need more space when I cook," and that this straightforward statement was not effective. So instead of nagging and complaining, she got Scott to leave her alone by asking him to chop parsley or by providing him with salsa and chips in another space. I suppose positive reinforcement, ignoring negative behaviors, and creating distractions are useful tools in trying to live with another person. Although I find talking, making I statements without ridiculing other people to be the approach that I am in the habit of using. Of course, the biggest difference between training animals and training our partners is that we cannot put our partner in a box. Deprive them of water, and only give them a little drink when they do what we want. Not only is this against the law, if we did do it, and then eventually we let our partner out, they might very well be upset with us. Indeed, the title of Amy Sutherland's book about animal training is Kicked, Bitten, and Scratched. In kicking, biting, and scratching, I suspect the animals were trying to tell the trainers something about how they felt about living in cages and being trained to do tricks for our amusement. In amusement parks, three trainers have been killed by an orca whale and many more attacked. In California, in the legislature, there's a bill that's been introduced banning the use of captive killer whales for entertainment. Although operant conditioning is based on positive reinforcement, it is also based on that box, on captivity. Because we can't keep our partner in a cage, if we hold back our affection, our attention, our hugs, and our smiles, because we don't want to reinforce behavior we don't like, our partners may eventually go to someone else to get what they want. If we only reinforce the things we want our partner to do, they may eventually move on, seeking a relationship with a person who accepts them as they are. Furthermore, our partner is not simply a creature whose purpose is to serve and amuse us. In a healthy, loving relationship between two adults, we treat our partner with the respect and dignity that we hope they will treat us. While our partners are capable of learning, in many ways their personalities are determined both by genetics and by years of living that occurred before we met them. There are limits to how much any of us can change, and there are certainly limits to how much any of us can change someone else. Instead of trying to change our partner, we might have more success in our relationship if we respected who they are and encouraged them to respect us the way we are. In the end, love requires the willingness to understand each other with our imperfections. While none of us should put up with abuse, love requires some commitment to accept another person for who they are. Anne Morrill Lindbergh said, "The only real security is not in owning or possessing, not in demanding or expecting, not in hoping even. Security in a relationship lies neither in looking back to what it was in nostalgia, nor forward to what it might be in dread or anticipation, but in living in the present relationship and accepting it as it is now. For relationships, too, must be like islands. One must accept them for what they are, here and now, within their limits. Islands surrounded and interrupted by the sea, and continually visited and abandoned by the tides."